Hello, and welcome again to Zero Hour. I'm your host, Tim Bowring. Today's show is a part of a series of shows that will explore Richmond's thriving art scene. Over the past 10 years, the Richmond art scene has exploded, and our town has become home for a number of highly respected and successful artists with national and international reputations. It is now time to let this well-kept secret out of the bag and to avail ourselves of this wealth of artistic knowledge. Twice a month, on a Monday, we will sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these respected artists. Today, we welcome Heidi Trapanier to the show. Welcome, Heidi. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
Can you give us a little bit of background on your career as an artist? Beginning with when things started to happen for you and sort of leading up to where you've shown recently and what kinds of things are coming up?
Okay. I think when things first started happening is when I was in graduate school. I was the recipient of the Joan Mitchell Award, which is an award for painting.
And not to be confused with Joan Mitchell, the guitarist, right?
Joni Mitchell, yeah.
Right, the same.
Not to be confused with her.
Because not that I would confuse it with that.
They were both rocking, but one was a painter.
Right, okay.
I won the Joan Mitchell Award, which was a fairly substantial grant. And from there, I had a few shows locally. I applied to shows, got into group shows, and was fortunate enough to have a show at Q Art Foundation in Chelsea.
In New York City.
In New York City.
For those of you who have never been outside of Richmond, right?
Yes.
Right. Well, let's talk a little bit, because I'm sure there are people listening who would love to know how to do that. So when you say you got a Joni Mitchell Award, how did that happen, and how did you end up essentially that turning into being in a gallery in New York?
Right.
What are the nuts and bolts of that?
Well, in order to receive an award like this, which is a nationally, it's a national award, you have to be nominated. You have to be a graduate student. You have to be nominated from your department.
Okay.
So that's not quite open to everyone, but there are grants and awards out there that are options for artists that need financial aid. The Krasner Pollock Foundation is one.
But if you're in an art school, you just go to the dean and say, I would like to apply for this? Or
yes.
Or do they just pick you out?
Anytime you show interest to be nominated in something, usually the departments are more than happy
to. So don't be humble.
Exactly.
Don't sit around and wait for them to point you out as the
star.
Well,
you have to work hard.
Okay.
You have to be, exemplary through your work. But I think that showing interest and showing a lot of drive also helps. So applying for grants that are open to people outside of the institutions of, being within a museum or within
a college. How do you find those grants?
You can go online and look and do searches for grants. That there are a few websites.
So like Google art grants or...
Fine artist grants, painting grants, it depends on
And then
on
I would assume there are ones probably through museums.
That is correct.
That would lead to other things. Mm-hmm.
The Virginia Museum offers a wonderful grant for people in school as graduates, undergraduates, and for professional artists. So that's also available.
All right. And then after that, what happened? How did you end up in the gallery you're in now? How did that come about?
Well, we can backtrack back to the Q Art Foundation, which is the group show that was exhibiting all the recipients of the Joan Mitchell Award from 2000 and 2001.
Right.
One of the gallery dealers in and around the Chelsea area walked into the space, saw my work, got my phone number from the people that worked there and called me directly.
Wow.
And it was...
How'd that feel?
It was scary.
Scary?
I didn't expect anything to happen that quickly. I had a plan. The plan was to go from Richmond to D.C. and from D.C. to New York, kind of head north.
Work your way up the ladder, right?
Exactly.
Right.
And then it just went from, A to Z immediately. Right. Yeah. And it was exciting and terrifying.
Well, I think you and I talked about this before, but, with so many ways of accessing work on the web, through television, all the media that's out there, I've heard people say, if you've got the talent, they're going to find you.
It's true. There's a lot of work out there, though. Yeah. You have to think that the market is super saturated and the internet is super saturated also. So
right.
there has to be some quality to your work that makes you stand out. I mean, there are millions of artists
out
there.
I mean, sitting in your studio and waiting for the knock on your door is probably not a great strategy.
No, it's not. And I know that it's depressing to constantly get rejection letters in the mail, but you just have to keep trying. I mean, I sell my work, but I still apply for $1,000 a month.
Uh-huh.
And that's
how many?
$1,000 a month.
Do you really?
Yes.
Yeah, that's great. One of the things that occurs to me is artists who feel as though, and you and I have talked about this a little too, but artists that feel as though, I don't want to be a part of the meat market. I don't want to sell my soul. If I get into that, I'm going to lose who I am. I'm going to lose my work. It's going to become a capitalist enterprise, and it's all going to go down the drain. How do you, I mean, having had some success, how do you deal with that? Did you ever have that perception when you were younger? That somehow,
absolutely.
Yuck, you didn't want to, you know,
yes,
you know?
Absolutely.
I mean, most artists seem to be torn. It's like, I don't do this for the money. I don't do this for the recognition. I make art to make art. But then
that's
you
how
always,
you have to start.
Yep. Yeah, but you always, you know, in the background, you know, people are always saying, you know, God, I hope someday I get recognized.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody wants to have a life of work and not have some sort of recognition for it. And recognition can come in different forms. It depends on what's important to people. Some people want just to be seen and to be shown and
right.
to be, and which can also mean that they want acceptance in one way or another. Another form of success is money. I mean, to be able to sell your work and just be able to live off of the income that comes from your work can be a measure of success to some artists. I think that with me personally, it's a combination of a lot of things. It's feeling comfortable in my own skin with my own work, in addition to being able to show in different places.
But what about the pressure that comes with being successful? Does it influence the choices you make? Are you less free? I mean, you, in a sense, when nobody knows who you are, you can go in your studio and do whatever you want. When people are looking at it, when they're saying, you know, we've got a show coming in 3 months, we need this many pieces of work.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find you still have the same freedom, or is it just a bigger challenge to cope with it?
It's a bigger challenge. It all depends on the way you look at it, too. I could perceive it as being stereotyped into a certain genre of work, but I also have to think about the way I was working in the past, which is I would flip-flop between one thing and another at
right.
random.
Right.
And this actually makes me focus.
That's interesting.
It causes me to have an intense amount of focus. So what happens is that my craft gets better and better and better because my ideas are all in the same realm that I keep perfecting it instead
right.
of flip-flopping back and forth, not really knowing what materials to use and things like that. What I've done is it's been streamlined for me, and so I've seen that in a positive light, that now that it's been streamlined,
right.
I really have to concentrate on color.
So instead of it being a trap you fall into where you feel stuck, where you have to keep making the same work, it really provides the kind of, at least at this point, the kind of incentive for you to really get focused and be able to produce. I don't know. Would you think the work quality is improved?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah?
This is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, Indie Radio, radio for the rest of us.
Definitely.
Okay, so in a sense, it's a positive thing.
I have more time to work on the craft of things rather than working on, well, can I change my medium? And also one other thing I want to mention is that I'm not quite sure whether it's because of constant changes in technology or whether our media is run so quickly and things like that, that technology is defunct within a month after you buy it.
Mm-hmm.
But changing consistently isn't necessarily good for an artist. I mean,
is not necessarily good
for an artist.
Why not?
I think that having an intense amount of focus allows you to think about why you're making what you make,
mm-hmm.
what you're making, and how you're making it. I mean, you have to answer all those questions
right.
when you single something out
right.
and decide that you're just going to do this one thing. And it does grow, but the changes that are made are very, very small,
yeah.
and they're baby steps. And eventually, you know, the work can branch out once
Right.
Once it's gotten to a point where it's comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, one of the things I thought of when I first saw your work was I immediately thought of Dr. Seuss.
Yes.
And I don't, you know, I don't know how you feel about that kind of in comparison. Mm-hmm. But there's, for those of you who haven't seen Heidi's work, there's a wonderful, playful quality to it that really is not dissimilar to some of the images you see in Dr. Seuss. It certainly is not comparable, you know, one to one. But, you know, and I was standing next to someone, I said, does this remind you of Dr. Seuss? Mm-hmm. And they sort of said, oh, well, now that you mention it.
Right.
How does, you know, what do you do with that?
Everybody has a visual comparison. That's how we learn.
Right.
You know, that's how, as far as visual knowledge is concerned, you need to make associations in order to learn something. So I think of it as, I would much rather people look at my work and say I look like Dr. Seuss than I look like, I don't know what a good example would be,
right.
like a Jackson Pollock. Yeah. I get, you know, I've gotten that before.
So you'd rather have people compare you to Seuss than
Absolutely.
Pollock?
Yeah.
Why?
Because Pollock had a very, very individualist style.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, his work was definitely just his work. And I think aligning yourself with another fine artist is more difficult to get out of than aligning yourself with someone who is an illustrator for books and for children's books.
Right.
And I think that playful quality is important, extremely important in my work, but also the quality that Dr. Seuss had where there was motion going on in almost everything that he did.
Very true.
I think that that's some of the representations that I have that are similar.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be considered maybe a mix. Maybe, you know, Pollock and Dr. Seuss together.
Pollock and Seuss.
Yeah.
That's an interesting image, yeah.
I don't know. I'd rather not be
associated with either one of them. But you can't. I mean, like you said, we are a culture that is, if we're nothing else, we are enormously visually sophisticated.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I worked with kids taking pictures 25 years ago. And then I worked with kids taking pictures more recently. Mm-hmm. It's astounding, the difference. I mean, these pictures, sophistication is unbelievable. I mean, used to get pictures with people's heads cut off and just kind of dumb pictures of buildings. And now you get pictures of a girl in the middle of a cartwheel in front of a very sort of 60s kind of compositional building, you know, by a 9-year-old. I mean, people are very sophisticated visually and have tremendous reservoir, you know.
And that's because of the sheer amount of imagery that we see on a day-to-day basis.
Well, I noticed also that you use a lot of red in your paintings, and I don't think you would ever ask a painter, maybe, you know, well, I don't know who else you'd ask except a painter about, you know, what's red about?
What's red about? I do use red. Actually, red is more memorable than any of the other colors.
Uh-huh.
I use a lot of other colors.
I've heard it's the new brown.
Red's the new black or the new brown, yeah.
I think brown was the new black. Or black was the new brown, or I don't know, whatever.
I actually think green is the new red.
Yeah, okay. Which makes purple the new orange, I think, if we're following this.
Yeah,
go ahead,
we're
anyway.
We're doing complimentary
colors.
Yeah,
right.
Okay. I think that red's the most memorable, so it'll stand out. When you see one of my paintings, that'll probably be the one thing that you remember the most. But I have over 30 different colors of red in my studio.
30 different colors of red?
30 different.
It's like the Eskimos have like 50 words for snow.
Exactly.
Right, yeah.
And so those variations are anywhere from a purple to an orange.
Right.
So when I see red, I don't actually... It's a huge category for me.
Right.
So it's
not like the rest of us flatlanders, you know, where it's just sort of, red. That's the color of a stop sign.
And it's intense and it's expressive. And, you know, it can be anywhere from violent to a warm color. So it depends on how it's used and in the manner in which it's used. So I think that to answer your question, it's just probably remembered the most because the blue paintings that I do.
Right.
It's not that they're forgettable. It's
right, I understand.
It's,
yeah,
it's that it's not as intense.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Well, tell me a little bit about your work. I mean, I know we've been talking about red and we've been talking about Dr. Seuss, but what's it about for you? Where does it come from? I mean, why does Heidi make this work?
I think it started with my desire to try to take abstraction or the idea of abstraction and give it a personality. to try to
give abstraction a personality. That's an interesting. What do you mean?
When you look at one of my pieces, you can see that it's divided up into different forms, and those different forms each have a function in the painting. And I give them personalities. So one thing will be tugging on something else or fighting with it licking it or doing something. And so there's almost like a war on every canvas, but I don't want to say war. It's like it's mid-action. It's like a freeze frame or a still of a movie.
Right.
And try to give those blobs personalities without being figurative. I really don't want to represent the figure in my work because I want it to be universal.
So the images, or as you refer to them, the blobs on your painting are not done just non-intentionally? I mean, there's tremendous intention to those forms?
There's intention, but there's accidents that happen.
Right.
And I definitely work with those. You can't control, when I load paint into a squirt gun, you really can't control what you're doing.
You load paint into a squirt gun?
I do.
Talk about that.
Extra large squirt gun.
Really?
I can load up with about a quart of paint and... if that's the market
Are you talking about those ones that you can buy at a toy store?
Super Soakers, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That must be a lot of fun when there's one around.
Absolutely fun. Yeah. I love my job.
I've got to tell you a funny story. There was a guy came in here, because we're speaking from a restaurant to you folks right now, and I'd worked with him when he was in the fifth grade. And the first thing he said when he sat down, he said, "Do you remember when we took those ketchup squirt bottles and filled them full of paint and just sprayed them all over those, he said, "I'll never forget doing that. It was the most amazing thing." And we'd like spray, it was very different than your process, but we'd spray it on, and then we'd scrape it off, and then spray more on and scrape it off. And it was interesting that, you know, 30 years later, this kid, that was the first thing he said to me.
That's really nice.
Know?
And
yeah.
That's actually what I use as a paint tool also, is squirt bottles. I try to draw with the paint, too. And by putting it in squirt bottles, that means that I can work on the ground and actually draw with paint.
Right.
And so a lot of the forms look very random, and some of them are planned out. Some of them just accidentally wind up that way, and I work with
them. Who would you say your process, is there anyone who's made work like yours that you would be, their process is similar to that?
Well, I mean, Pollock worked on the floor. And
but he used drip, right?
Paint,
I mean, he mostly drip.
Yeah, from paint cans and things like that, and from the brush directly.
So it's almost you remember those folks who, well, I guess not, but the folks that were working in stains?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any similarity there? In terms probably not, huh?
Not a whole lot, because that has a lot to do with the material that it's on. I'm really in control of the material that I'm working with.
What do you paint on?
When you stain something.
What?
It depends. I paint on board when I have smaller paintings, and then I paint on canvas on board for larger paintings.
Okay. Is there much of a difference in terms of how, because this now changes the process, well, maybe it doesn't. Is there much of a difference between how you approach your paintings and how you approach an installation?
Yes.
And what's the, you know.
The installation, the painting can be done all at once.
Uh-huh.
An installation that I do are usually really large scale.
And they're on a wall that's existing?
They're on a pre-existing wall.
Right.
And you would think almost the wall as a canvas.
How so big?
The biggest I've done is 75 feet by 11 feet.
Okay.
So,
are they? Do they stay? Or are they?
No, they're temporary.
They're temporary.
Yeah.
What's that like?
This is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, Indie Radio, radio for the rest of us.
The only thing I can think of is I saw Buddhist monks, in the sand,
exactly,
making
sand
these
painting.
Sand. Yes. Mm-hmm. And then they just all get together and blow it off, and it's
that's part of it. It's the act of doing it, to see how tenuous something like that is, to see how impermanence can change a space, and to know that it's only going to be up for 3 months really changes people's ideas about the
space.
Does
it change how you approach it? Is it more freeing or is it more confining?
It's more freeing.
I
can experiment with it, and there's three processes involved in it. I paint, I cut, I outline, then I bring it to the space and assemble.
Oh, okay. So you make it on the floor.
I make it on the floor
and then
on
you,
adhesive paper.
Okay, and then you cut it.
And then I outline
it
cut it out and then adhere it to the wall. So there's a different process there because I'm able to assemble it on site.
Do you plan to change what you're doing? I mean, we talked about this a little bit earlier in terms of changes being incremental as opposed to when nobody's watching, you're all over the board.
Right.
Do you plan to experiment with new images, colors, surfaces? I mean, do you think...
Always.
Do you think the images... Has anybody ever said to you, these paintings, one is just like the next?
Yeah.
And what's your how do you feel about that?
It depends on how you perceive it. Again, I think that I don't have a consistent background color, and I think that that can be a huge step to some artists to switch your background color.
Right.
So
all these creative people who are really very conservative when it comes right down to it, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think artists in that manner are conservative sometimes.
Yeah.
I think that I play around enough with forms and with colors to be able to have pretty much an endless amount of opportunities on the canvas.
Mm-hmm.
Also,
yeah.
You have to think that when I'm trying to get personalities for these forms, I have something in mind. I mean, I have everything from reading Don Quixote in mind to, you know, consumer culture.
Right.
So I can constantly change my ideas and what the paintings are about versus what the paintings look like.
Right.
So they're different.
So you're not bored.
Depending on never.
I mean, that's
never.
It's not something you would think
different.
Of with an artist, but I, you know, yeah.
You can always talk about something different. I can always read a book and get an enormous amount of input from that.
Right. Okay. Well, how do you feel about being a successful artist? Is it? Do you feel like a successful artist? I mean, you can still walk down the street without people tackling you, but in the arts community, you know, you've gone fairly quickly from a graduate student to someone who is now, where are you, let me confuse things. How do you feel about this? How's it impacted you?
It's definitely given me more confidence. I think that that's the one positive thing that's happened. A lot of work goes with this, and you have to be able to tackle it and to be able to get everything done that you need to get done. I'm showing internationally now, and within a year, I'm having 3 solo shows.
Where are you showing?
Costa Rica, in Madrid, Spain, and in the United States. So.
Okay. When are those coming up?
Costa Rica will be at the end of August. I'm showing in Doha, Qatar
at the end
of September. Yeah. And then Madrid, Spain will be in 2006.
Are you going to be at those shows?
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm
going to
install so I get in a week.
So it hasn't had an impact in terms of how you communicate with other artists. I mean, do you sense jealousy? Do you sense that people are? That's interesting.
I think that I'm a fairly down to earth person, so I'm really approachable. I think most of the people who know me in this community know that I haven't changed a whole lot.
Would you mind? Can I get your autograph when we're done here?
No. You can't afford it.
How much do you sell your paintings for? What are you, my accountant? No, but I'd like to be. Okay. You use an assistant in your work, right?
Yes.
Or with your work, or however you do that. How do you do that?
To the
uneducated person, it would be like, well, does she make it or doesn't she make it? I mean, what's this about? You got someone making your work for you?
No, I don't have someone making my work for me, but my assistants have always been enormous helps to me. I mean, I wouldn't be able to do as much as I do without their help.
Right.
And what they are responsible for is the things that take up a lot of my time that don't have a whole lot to do with the creativity of the piece. So I have hours of sanding and cleaning and sanding and more cleaning and sanding of these to make a decent surface. And if I don't have to do that, then that leaves me more time to actually make the work.
Right. And to sign autographs and travel internationally.
Yeah,
yes, okay.
Sure, absolutely.
I'm sorry, where are you going? Come back.
I am, and they also create my work, keep my schedule straight for me because I get pulled in a lot of different directions and it's hard to concentrate when that happens. Creating my work up, wrapping it, making sure that I haven't missed anything. They'll give the once over on my canvas.
So you know the funny thing about this is, is that, and I think a lot of artists don't know this, is that if you're going to make art, what you said earlier, it takes a lot of discipline, a lot of focus, but it also takes a certain amount of business acumen to be able to do this. Because if you do hit it, if you do have some talent and somebody sees it, all of a sudden you're in business. I mean, that's like the B word to most artists. What do you mean I'm in business? I did this so I don't have to go into business.
Right. Well,
how did I end up in business?
Exactly.
But is that, do you find that true?
Oh, yeah. I have 1 or 2 days a week that I do nothing but administrative.
Really?
And I email slides or email JPEGs and send slides off and write letters and thank people for reviews and things like that. And it just has to be done. And that, you know, I know that those 2 days have to be set out for that, and I get it done, and then I have the rest of the week to do what I want to do.
Well, let me ask you one last question before we close here. What do you think you'd do if your painting stopped selling tomorrow? Your gallery called you
they
up
might.
And says, well...
I mean, they might have already stopped selling. I'm not aware.
Waiting for the phone call. What would you do?
Well, I would still be doing it, and it... I'm very invested in what I do financially, so it would probably come to a halt fairly quick that I could afford my studio and things like that, but I would definitely keep working.
And we would always hire you here at the cafe.
That's what I did. I was bartender and waitress, and I know I can always do that. Or teaching is definitely an option for me, and that's something that I want to do. I have done in the past, and I want to continue to do. And then eventually I would like to... cut back on the painting a little bit and go back into teaching. I just feel like I learn a lot being around students, and I learn almost more than I'm able to teach in situations like that. And being around younger artists gives you access to new ideas and things like that. Not that I would be taking them from them at all, but that it's exciting.
I guess that wasn't the last question, because I'd like to know what you think of the work that's coming out of, for instance, Virginia Commonwealth University Art School. I mean, what do you think of the work that young folks are doing?
I think we're in postmodernism now, so it's hard to rate something on the quality of the type of work. But you can definitely see the people that know what they're doing and have the focus and aren't doing things simply to try to rewrite what painting is or what sculpture is. And the people that have impeccable craft in what they do, and it shows that they care about what they're doing. I think that there are a lot of great theoretical minds in VCU right now. So even the written pieces that I've seen are pretty impressive. I want all artists to do well.
Yeah.
So they'll be showing in New York this summer.
Yeah, I know. It's great.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful thing for graduate students.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So I hope some of them do well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Heidi. Are you showing anywhere right now?
No, not right now. My next show will be in Costa Rica.
Okay.
Thanks again for tuning into Zero Hour. I hope you've enjoyed this show and look forward to joining you again for lunch every first and third Monday of the month at 12:30. This is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us.